This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 1-888-408-6141. That's 1-888-408-6141 or tryzona.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today we're going to talk to one of my favorite guests. He's a great communicator, and we've talked to him about a variety of subjects. He is Jim Laval. He's here to discuss the metabolic syndrome with a particular view towards supplements that support treatment of metabolic syndrome, with special focus on research on chiolic aged garlic extract. Jim is, above all, a great communicator. He's an educator, clinician, author, and industry consultant in the field of integrative health care. He's a registered pharmacist. He's a certified clinical nutritionist and founder and chairman of Metabolic Code Enterprises. And he has his own clinic in California, the Progressive Medical California Clinic. Got a couple of books. We've talked about them previously on the program. Your Blood Never Lies, which is a great book that helps you interpret blood tests, which is an art. And his bestseller, Cracking the Metabolic Code. They're available in the usual sources. And he's got websites, jimlaval.com or metabolicode.com. Welcome to our show, Jim. How you doing?
Oh, it is always good to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. So I wanted to do a deep dive on metabolic syndrome because I think I can think of no single theme that is more important in the field of medicine. But also in integrative care than metabolic syndrome, because number one, it's probably the single biggest pathway to people getting sick and dying in America. And it's so amenable to natural therapy, and conventional therapies don't do a good job of addressing it. So it really, it's right in our wheelhouse as integrative physicians, right?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, and honestly, this is it's an epidemic. I mean, a lot of people don't even know when you hear the term metabolic syndrome what it is, but I mean, we have an epidemic level of people. When you look at the data, it's scary. 50% of the U.S. population is insulin resistant or diabetic, and actually 38% are insulin resistant, which kind of puts you as one criteria for metabolic syndrome. So think of 38% of the U.S. population just there. A third of all adults have hypertension. 50% of adults over the age of 50 have high blood pressure. And then we have the obesity rate of 38%, along with 78% of people being overweight. Now, why am I mentioning all those things? It's the combination or the cluster of being overweight, meaning you have a BMI over 30, so you're classified as being obese. You have pre-diabetes, or you're insulin resistant and your blood sugars are, you know, maybe even slightly within the normal range, but maybe at the high end of normal, which would indicate you have about an 80% risk. If you have a 98 blood sugar and it's normal to be 65 to 99, you are really at a 78% risk of being a diabetic in the next decade. So, you know, I classify people, you know, once they get in the high 90s and up, they're there as pre-diabetics. And then pre-hypertensive, meaning your blood pressure is slightly elevated. Now we're being more aggressive with medication, all the more reason to talk to people that want to do integrative care and natural therapies. And then the next thing that happens is when you have these constellation of things, when you're insulin resistant, you make bad LDL cholesterol. So your LDL cholesterol becomes very tiny and bores into your arteries. But you make lots of LDL.
Small, dense LDL, the bad type of particles.
Small, dense LDL cholesterol. I always tell people it's like a BB instead of a beach ball. You know, you could throw a beach ball with a tennis net all day long, and it's not going to go through the tennis net. You throw a BB through that tennis net, and you're going to get quite a few of them there BBs to get through that tennis net. And that's how the inner lining of your artery works, right? Your inner lining, called the endothelium, think of it as a mesh like a tennis net. And the smaller the LDL, the more likely it deposits or traps on that inner lining, and then becomes the source of an inflammatory response from your immune system. And when you combine that with an acidic diet and a low mineral status and metabolic syndrome, people have low magnesium, and that means they're going to be acidic. You break down your bone, you calcify that artery, and you lay down plaque. Now, so LDL is high, HDL is low, triglycerides can be high, so your liver gets fatty, and that is metabolic syndrome. So bad cholesterol, not enough good cholesterol, elevated triglycerides, pre-hypertensive, pre-diabetic, and obese, any of that combination, and you're really likely to have MET-S.
Indeed. And you mentioned obesity, but is it possible to be seemingly like, you look okay. You know, maybe you got a little jelly.
The biggest thing I see is the people that are obese, a lot of times they're not looking. They're not going to get regular checkups, but they just miss a lot of these things. They don't realize they're hypertensive. They don't realize that they're insulin resistant. Nobody's really talking to them about their blood sugar. So this obesity piece, it's really disturbing, because 22% of obese people have fatty liver. And when you have MET-S, you're more prone for fatty liver, and more people will need liver transplants due to fatty liver than due to hepatitis in the next decade.
Yeah, we're seeing a real change, because it used to be you had to get an infection to mess up your liver, or maybe if you're a big boozer. Now it's more. It seems to be more diet related. We're coping better with infections. We're preventing them. We're treating them, but our diets seem to be getting worse, and it's doing our livers in.
Well, you know what? What's interesting about this on diet is, look, there's no bakeries. Everybody knows we shouldn't eat donuts, and we shouldn't eat muffins, and we shouldn't eat cupcakes. But not regularly. I'm not going to tell you on a birthday you want to eat a cupcake, or you occasionally want to have a cookie. I mean, I'm not that militant with my folks. And I think it creates frustration, and then they end up craving foods, and it's a problem. I got to show them smarter choices and get them to crave less. But the reality is, no bakeries are closing, no liquor stores are closing, and no broccoli shops are opening up. So, you know, people don't have choices that they can stop and get that, you know, kind of a healthy satisfaction. And so everybody goes, oh, we get smoothies. Well, most smoothies are jacked with sugar and contribute to your metabolic syndrome problem. So I think that the diet piece is so important. And then I think mineral status and stress response is so important at the same time.
And there's now a lot of research on the role of the microbiome in influencing how, you know, two individuals perhaps on a similar diet, similar lifestyle, one with a bad balance of bacteria intestinally, they may interpret their environment differently because of the disruption in the normal diversity of the bacteria in their gut.
Oh, I think there's a huge issue there, and it's not just about the microbiome, because there's the whole argument of the Firmicutes versus the Bacteroidetes species, and the Firmicutes actually ends up being associated with people with MET-S and obesity, and that part is true, and I'll tell you the other part that's true, too, is we know that people with metabolic syndrome and have higher levels of something called circulating endotoxin. And what that is that their flora is dying off faster and releasing protein fragments from their cell wall. And so these fragments are called endotoxin. And lo and behold, this is out of the Journal of Diabetes, okay? This is the American Diabetes Association Journal. Okay. And it showed a direct correlation to lipopolysaccharide or circulating endotoxin. The higher it is in your bloodstream, the more symptoms of MET-S or criteria for MET-S the individual met. And so my point to that is that a lot of times our diet is also killing off bacteria as quickly as we're trying to get them to survive. So as the microflora is going, you know, and dying off, and because of poor circulation, we're not supplying the intestine with adequate blood flow to nourish our microflora, and maybe our diet is very low in resistant starch and fiber that feeds the flora. As that flora is dying off, it's triggering inflammatory signaling in the body and increasing these criteria. So the microbiome management is so important.
Indeed. You have other aspects of lifestyle. You mentioned stress. How does stress and a related problem, sleep deprivation, contribute to metabolic syndrome?
Well, you know, the big one, of course, is that, if you looked at, Wall Street Journal 5 months ago, they had an article, stress causes elevations in cholesterol. When you're under stress, this has been well associated that when you're under chronic stress and your cortisol goes up, you make more bad cholesterol. And then as your stress goes up, your blood sugars go up. So a lot of, any diabetic will tell you when they're under stress, their blood sugars go up. They can't control them as well. So for the normal person, when they're under that kind of stress, their blood sugars go up. And when your blood sugars go up and you start to become insulin resistant and your cortisol levels are high because of stress, you trigger your body to store fat. And so you store fat and you make more adrenaline. So you're gaining weight. You're becoming insulin resistant. Your stress hormones are increasing the adrenaline. And when the adrenaline goes up in your body, the epinephrine and norepinephrine, its effect on your blood vessels is that they tighten down. And so that starts to create blood pressure problems. So with chronic stress, you get bad cholesterol, blood pressure goes up, and you get insulin resistant. Three of the criteria have been documented directly just from cortisol elevation or chronic stress. And then sleep, takes it a step further, because when you're sleep deprived, your body needs that blood sugar in order to get your brain to be able to continue to function. And so that starts to create problems with, once again, insulin resistance, food, hedonic urges for eating, and which creates a whole cascade of problems.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that because I'm a great sleeper, very regular sleeper, you have plenty of sleep. But election night, it was like way into the night, as the returns went in. I was just riveted to the TV set. And then I made myself go to sleep because I got to go to work. I'm not going to ruin my day. But I got up like super early to check to see the final election results. So I probably got about 3 hours of sleep. I noticed my appetite soared the next day. It was like a whole different ballgame. I probably consumed about, a third more calories just because of the fact that one night of sleep deprivation.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't it amazing how quickly it happens? So imagine not getting enough sleep night after night, because sleep is a disorder of hyperarousal, right? When you get insomnia, you're not sleeping. It's because your day brain interferes with your night brain, and you make way more cortisol than you should, and that activates your brain. So, and you stay awake. But the problem is when your brain stays awake, you need more food. So you don't get past it. So these are really important concepts. And look, environmental burden's been known to contribute to MedS, right? The recent articles on and studies on arsenic as it relates to the development of prediabetes and diabetes. The effect of the, of other compounds like solvents on thyroid function, because of course when thyroid function goes down, you burn less, your lipids go up, your insulin receptors don't work, your blood sugars go up, and so there's a lot of things from the environment, diet, stress, sleep, and then poor quality of food. Even when you're picking good sources of food, if it doesn't have enough magnesium in it, so not enough magnesium. Magnesium is the number one nutrient deficiency associated with the development of metabolic syndrome in America. And that's NIH studies.
Hmm. And we'll get into specific supplements in just a moment. But if you're focusing back on diet, there's a definite association between inflammation and metabolic syndrome. It's like a chicken and egg kind of thing. It's like metabolic syndrome promotes inflammation. The worse the inflammation, the worse the metabolic syndrome. It's just kind of a vicious cycle. But they recently came up with something called the DII, the Dietary Inflammatory Index, which is really cool because it rates foods on the basis of whether they promote inflammation or whether they retard inflammation. So is that provide us with a guideline as to what you should eat if you have metabolic syndrome?
Well, I would have to see what that, you know, what is the food that's on it. But without a doubt, you want to have an anti-inflammatory effect, because the bottom line is, and when you trigger inflammation and you increase what's called your inflammatory cytokines, in particular one called interleukin-6, IL-6, in addition to causing kind of a chronic inflammatory state and also causing you to release more histamine, which then makes your gut leaky and now you react to more foods, which a lot of people don't realize that that's kind of the pathway on that, and it's really important to understand. But, you know, when IL-6 goes up, it also, you know, tends towards fatigue. And so people start to feel, I'm feeling tired, gee, I'm reacting to foods. And yes, you want to eat an anti-inflammatory diet. We prescribe an anti-inflammatory diet to every patient, A, that walks into our clinic, and B, we teach it to every doctor that goes through the fellowship courses that I chair, that they need to get people on anti-inflammatory diets so that they can quell the kind of the disruption that occurs at the receptor level due to, you know, for all the hormones that are working in your body due to inflammation. When you get inflamed, those receptors don't work as well.
It was once thought that saturated fat was the culprit, that it was the pro-inflammatory substance par excellence. Have our views on that changed, especially in the past couple of years?
Well, I think that here's how I think. As long as you're eating saturated fat with enough resistant starch or fiber that will feed the beneficial flora, I don't see a problem with saturated fat. The big problem people get into when they eat saturated fat is they go into a ketogenic diet. And it's clearly in the literature, I mean, the last 5 years, that when you eat a high saturated fat, low fiber diet, that you increase circulating endotoxin. Mm. And so people don't end up tolerating it. So is it good to do saturated fat? Sure, I don't have any problem with it. But as always, what we're seeing happen today is now we're going for another Band-Aid on a bullet hole. We're going to go to a zero carbohydrate diet in order to fix our insulin receptors instead of really trying to fix the problem, mm-hmm. which could be stress, all the other things that could go along with it.
I think sometimes people misinterpret the message, because now that we've exonerated saturated fat from dairy and from meat in some studies, I think some people are just putting the feed bag on. And they aren't doing the basic stuff, which is eating their fresh fruits and veggies and getting plenty of healthy fiber, which is an important constituent of whatever diet you're on, whether you're on a vegan diet or whether you're on a diet that incorporates animal protein.
Exactly. I mean, in the end, you can't get away from plant food, or you shouldn't be getting away from plant food. whether you're adding animal protein or deciding not to have it, you've got to have the plant. And when you say vegan or vegetarian, I always tell people, well, that means you got to eat vegetables. That you're not carbitarian, you're not pastatarian, you're not ricetarian, you're vegetarian. And they lose that. I see it all the time. The new thing, the latest study came out where they use what they called an eco-Atkins approach. I don't know if you've seen that, but they call it an eco-Atkins diet, right? It's a vegetarian, lower carbohydrate diet. But in the study, people had a hard time sticking with it because, man, they weren't getting that starch. So, but they're trying to make an effort to design more diets that are vegetarian that still reduce the carbohydrate burden, because we're having so many big problems with the insulin receptor.
Okay, so glycemic,
which is the source of this metabolic syndrome problem.
Right. Glycemic index, still a tool that might be worthwhile utilizing if we're rating our carbohydrate intake?
Well, yeah, there's two things that I know we do. We give people a carbohydrate counter because I used to not want to do that. But then I found out when we started doing diet surveys on people, when we were doing real clinical trial work, that people way overestimate their food. They'll eat, I mean, underestimate. They'll eat 4,000 calories a day and they'll tell you they eat two.
Right, yeah.
I mean, and so we give them the counter carbs, and then we educate them on the glycemic index, and we also educate them on the glycemic load.
Right.
So what is the load actual? Yeah. And those are the three things that we do.
Yeah, I think there's some paradoxes there because it turns out that ice cream has a pretty low glycemic index, but it's got a big glycemic load because it's
exactly. Yeah. Well, people hear that. They hear that their glycemic index of ice cream is low, so that means, oh, I can have all the ice cream I want. I thought it was a health food. I'm right. Right? And yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So I think the misgiving is, I mean, you see it all the time. If you walk into a grocery store today, even the most elegant health food stores, go over to the juice file. Everybody's doing juices now, right? Oh, mine's non-pasteurized, just squeezed today, you know, was done in the moonlight, all that stuff. But when you turn the stinking bottle around, it's still got 50 grams of sugar in it, because even though it says it's a green drink, the number one, two, and three ingredients are apple juice, grape juice, and pineapple.
Yep.
And then it goes to maybe some spinach, and it takes the green color. But that is, you may as well open up a Mountain Dew. Because you're getting, because of the amount of fructose you're getting, and that drink is driving insulin resistance more so than taking sucrose or dextrose. And I am not a fan. Like, there's pops are a whole other issue. I mean, I'm obviously not a fan of it. It's acidic. It's way too much sugar. And if it's the artificial sweeteners, that has its own bag of worms. But the fact that people are running to these fruit juices and doing them like they are, and they don't know how to read a label, it's causing the same problem. Look, for all the effort and all the green food that you see, go into a big box retailer. There's all kinds of gluten-free eating, all kinds of these healthy foods. You still look outside. Obesity grew by 3% in the last 4 years in our population. 3%. That's huge. It's a huge number. Huge shift.
I think they call this phenomenon greenwashing. It's taking stuff that has an aura of health around it, selling it to health conscious people, but ultimately with the same undermining effects on their health, because, you know, gluten free, even more calories sometimes, a higher glycemic index. Okay, you know, we'll give it to you any which way you want.
Yeah, you take all the protein out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the protein's out of that gluten free bread now.
Yeah,
it's a calorie bomb. And oh, but it was a gluten-free organic carob nib cookie, and I ate 10 of them because I'm still stressed out. Well, yeah, so you're going to gain weight, and you're still going to throw off your microflora in your gut. And people still, in my opinion, need to learn the principles of what a healthy diet is and what a healthy diet is for them, because you saw a wide variation. There was a great study that came out of England about 6 months ago, where they looked at carbohydrate load tolerance, and there's a wide variation in tolerance to carbohydrates between individuals.
Yeah.
So some people really, when they say, I don't do well I got to really watch my carbs, they're tuned into their body, because it probably is the case. Mm-hmm. And other people can tolerate it a little more.
Mm-hmm. So I think the point of that article is, like, different strokes for different folks, and there's no one single diet approach that addresses everybody's metabolism. So that has to be taken into account.
And refreshing to hear somebody say that, because, you know, the thought that everybody has to eat one way is simply, it's an immature thought that we all eat exactly the same way. Now, what is a mature thought? What's smart? Eat as many plants as you can. Eat as many vegetables as you can. Yeah, get the vegetables in. That's going to help you a lot. And most people, you know, don't make their number, right? They never get the 9 servings. They get the 3 or 4 if they're lucky.
So that's an important foundation. All right, this is a good point at which to pause, because our listeners know we divide these podcasts into two parts. In part two, I want to touch on exercise, but I want to get to some news that our listeners can use when it comes to your favorite supplements, Jim, because when it comes to supplements, we actually have a wide variety of tools at our disposal for treating metabolic syndrome far better than the pharmaceutical treatments. Yes, there's some pharmaceutical treatments that address it, but with a lot of side effects, and natural therapies really outdo conventional therapies for metabolic syndrome. So our subject, metabolic syndrome, when we return with today's guest, Jim Laval, more on this subject. Thanks for joining us for part one. Stay tuned for part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.